morning and welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Jim Hansen. I'll be your board rep today. Hope you've all had a wonderful week. There are a variety of announcements in your order of service, and we encourage you to read them and take them home as you would like. A couple other announcements to make are we're inviting everyone to join us for a spaghetti lunch after the service in the social hall. It's a high school fundraiser for their trip to Appalachia or Appalachia. That'll be discussed there too. And also like you to join, or if you care to join, a discussion group the March 23rd to May 11th on Hegel. Our in-resident philosopher Mike Santo will be leading that, and it's from 7 to 8 on Wednesday nights. And I believe Mark had an announcement he wanted to make. I've been told.
Good morning, everybody. Tuesday is March 1st. What does that mean? In about 3 weeks, we're going to have what? The most exciting thing?
A retreat.
Maybe spring break? Maybe March Madness? No, a retreat. We're all excited about a retreat. Today is the last Sunday to sign up. We got a great program plan. Philip Chard, who was here a month or so ago, is going to be talking about what he does. We're going to have a great youth activity with Jesse Knox, bonfire, catered dinner, potluck lunch. So in the foyer, sign up. It's cheap, $20 a head, $5 a child.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. I invite you to greet those sitting around you. Visiting us for the first time today, we particularly welcome you and encourage you to sign the guest ledger in the foyer. There's a variety of information on the table out there. Feel free to take any that interests you. I'll be in the social hall after the meeting, not only for the spaghetti dinner, but to answer any questions you might have about our church. And if you'd like to become a member, I'd be happy to talk with you about that. If you're visiting with your children, it's our custom that the children remain until after the offertory, which time they leave for their religious education classes. The child is welcome to join them, and if you'd like to go along and observe your child in the class, please do so. There's also a nursery. It's right across the hall on your left, and child care services are also provided there during classes end at 11:15, at which time you can pick up your children and go to spaghetti dinner, hopefully. We enjoy getting to know our guests. If there are any members who have brought guests or any guests that would feel comfortable introducing themselves, now is the time. And I think I've mentioned this a couple times every... Oh, okay, we got one.
This is Susan and Paul at New to the area, but is UU churches in the past. Okay. And Prince Paul is the principal at the Unitarian University Lake School.
Oh, welcome. And everyone's invited to join us in the social hall afterwards for refreshments and conversations and today's spaghetti. Please put your cell phone on silence during the service. And I hope you find this morning's service inspiring. Our speaker today is our own Reverend Jane Eskenson, with assistance by our own Michael Santo. And with that, I'll turn it over to John.
Our opening words this morning are from Robert French Levitz. Holy and beautiful the custom which brings us together in the presence of the Most High, to face our ideals, to remember our loved ones in absence, to give thanks, to make confession, to offer forgiveness, to be enlightened, and to be strengthened. Through this quiet hour breathes the worship of ages, the cathedral music of history. Three unseen guests attend, faith, hope, and love. Let all our hearts prepare them place.
Share a story with you this morning.
Give someone for something they've done before. What does that mean? What is
What does that mean?
If you say sorry to somebody.
You say that you're sorry. Okay. Is that a hard thing to do or an easy thing to do? Sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's hard. Have you ever had to say you're sorry to anybody? Have you? Your little brother, you've had to say you're sorry to. Yeah. Well, I'm going to read a story called The Doll and the Snake. This is how it begins. I was cold. I sat with my arms hugging my body on the steps outside my house, and I was cross. My sister had been annoying me again, or my little brother. And I shouted at her, and I threw her doll out the window. And my dad told me to go and get it and not be so silly, and I stamped outside and I slammed the door. Why should I get her stupid doll? What did I care if it got wet in the rain? It didn't matter to me. The porch over the front door was small, but it was keeping me dry at least. I didn't want to go back doors again, and I was shivering, and I was cold, and I was mad. And then the front door opened just a little crack. My sister peeped through it, and she said, "I'm sorry, Tom. I didn't mean to annoy you." "Oh, that's okay," I said. "Come on back inside, Tom. I'll lend you my toy snake if you come inside." I jumped down off the step and ran into the garden, and there under the tree was her doll. I picked it up and it cried. It was one of those kind of dolls. And I ran back in through the front door. My sister took the doll and gave it a big, big, big hug. And she pulled me through into the living room and she put her toy snake into my hand. "Oh, I'm sorry too," I said. "Is your doll okay?" "Oh, she doesn't mind getting wet. I just gave her a bath yesterday." And suddenly, I felt much better. I felt happy again and warm. And we played a good game with the doll and the snake, and the snake was magic, and it could bring the doll anything that it wanted. And do you know what my sister's doll wanted? It wanted a big brother to play with. And so then I got to be the big brother for that doll and the snake. And my sister's weird and troublesome sometimes, but she's okay, and now we're friends. Well, that's that story. And so what we're talking about today is that sometimes this maybe was a difficult situation, and it was really hard for Tom to say he was sorry when he threw the doll out the window. But when his sister said it first, "I'm sorry," then it became easier, didn't it? So sometimes you have to be the first one to say you're sorry, and then you feel better, because otherwise you feel a little sick in your stomach sometimes. So that is our story for the day, and that's what we're going to be talking about in here. And today, if you have a chance to say you're sorry to somebody, or just go give them a hug, this is the day to do it. Okay? All right. Thank you. We're going to start with our opening hymn, which is in your blue songbook, Singing the Journey. And it is number 1012, When I Am Frightened. And you are all invited to stand if you are willing and able.
Thank you.
is our time of offering during the service, and if you're a guest, you don't need to feel obligated, but otherwise, for the rest of us, please feel free to contribute to the building of our church.
Two readings from the Gospels, one from the Gospel of Matthew and one from Luke. The first one is from Matthew 16. Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and undergo great suffering at the hands of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "God forbid it, Lord, this must never happen to you." But Jesus turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." Then Jesus told his disciples, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit them if they gain the whole world, but forfeit their life?" The second is from Luke. As Jesus and the disciples were going along the road, someone said to Jesus, "I will follow you wherever you go." Jesus said to him, "Foxes have holes, and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." To another person, Jesus said, "Follow me." But that person said, "Lord, let me first go bury my father." But Jesus said to him, "Let the dead bury their own dead, but as for you, go and proclaim the kingdom of God." Another person said, "I will follow you, Lord, but let me first say farewell to those at my home." Jesus said to him, "No one who puts a hand to the plow and looks back is fit for the kingdom of God."
Now
now we've come to the sacred time in our service where we share our own joys and concerns for the week. And please state your name, and usher will bring a microphone, and I'll light a candle for your joy and for concern. And I'll light the, we also have our memorial candle, and today I'd like to light it in regard to, against the polarization that we seem to be having so much of, and the hopes that we can find some common ground for the common good. I'd also like to light the first candle of joy for our choir. I really had goosebumps listening to his opening piece there. That was wonderful.
I'm Diane. I'd like you to light a candle of concern for my stepdaughter, who was just let go from her job as a special ed teacher. She's been working there for less than a year, so she was one of the first to let go.
My name is Fran, and I'd like you to light a candle of joy for my daughter, Jessie. She became engaged last night to just a wonderful, wonderful man. And so the family's very excited and happy.
My name is Jesse Knox, and if you could light a candle in memory of my brother, Wes Biswell, and a candle of sorrow for my family. It was a sudden and unexpected loss.
My name is Mark Brewer, and a few weeks ago my mother had a heart attack, but she had stents put in. She's doing well. She needs one more stent, so we're trying to schedule that procedure, and I'll probably go see her in March. So she's doing well. But
my name's Sue, and could you light a candle of joy? I didn't get a chance last week for the kids who led the transition service, and particularly for the note I got this week making a reference to how difficult it was to wrangle that group of preteens, and it was the first time that it had really struck me that they are preteens.
My name is Greg. If you could light a candle of concern and hope for our next-door neighbor who's struggling with cancer chemotherapy treatments, having a rough time right now. So.
My name's Susan. I want to light a candle of joy. My daughter is exercising religious tolerance this morning. She's attending a Catholic service with one of her friends.
Hi, my name is Stacy, and I'd like a candle of joy. Thanking the high school students, I wasn't here last week, to thank the high school students and the adults for the parents' night out. It was a wonderful time out with friends that night while the kids were here. And also a candle of concern for a family friend who's battling a very aggressive form of breast cancer.
John, this is Carlin Wagner. Could you light a candle of hope that our legislators will do the right thing in regards to everything happening in Madison? The rally that we attended yesterday was awesome.
Yeah, my name is Tom. I'd like you to light a candle of joy for a successful Habitat for Humanity work day yesterday. If you were watching the emails, you probably saw a change of destination several times. But in the end, there were enough of us that they split us into two groups and we worked on two houses.
This is Tracy. If you would light a candle of joy, I am just so proud of Morgan. She won a concerto competition, and she's going to be playing a concerto with the UW Wind Ensemble this afternoon. So send her calm thoughts, and if you can happen to join us at UW-Milwaukee this afternoon at 3, it's going to be a good concert.
And concerns that we keep to ourselves today.
invite you now to enter into a moment of meditation, prayer, and reflection, and I will lead with some words by Mary Oliver. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about your despair, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. You may remain seated while we sing the centering hymn, Spirit of Life, which you will find in your gray hymnal. It's number 123.
A Litany of Atonements by Robert Eller Isaacs. For remaining silent when a single voice would have made the difference, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again with love. For each time that our fears have made us rigid, and inaccessible. We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again with love. For each time that we have struck out in anger without just cause, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again with love. For each time that our greed has blinded us to the needs of others, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again with love. For the selfishness which sets us apart and alone, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again with love. For falling short of the admonitions of the Spirit, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again with love. For losing sight of our unity, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again with love. For those and for so many acts, both evident and subtle, which have fueled the illusion of separateness, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again with love.
As Unitarian Universalists, we don't really ever mention evil, sin, or forgiveness as a part of our religious heritage or as a part of our weekly Sunday worship service. For many of us, these words come from our former religious traditions, and those are traditions we left behind because they no longer worked for how we view the world or for our view of how humanity looked, that view being the inherent worth and dignity of everyone. But we also rarely use these words of evil, sin, and forgiveness because we seem somehow to link them together, the one leading to the other, with therefore the root cause of needing forgiveness coming from those dual concepts of evil and sin. We turn away from those two root words of evil and sin because our focus on humanity is on its inherent goodness, of what we are capable of doing, of achieving, of becoming. And the words of evil and sin harken back to a different religious path that spoke more to the weakness of a person, to the potential immoral path of a person, to one who needed to confess their sins, who needed to feel shamed and like a lump of clay, to be molded not by oneself or by experience, but to be molded by God, to be blessed and to be saved, to be forgiven. In this Western culture of ours, where our Puritan forebears are our undergirding, and the ever-growing concept of our being a Christian nation as our current everyday overlay, we can now find endless books written about forgiveness. There are seminars and workshops, institutes and symposiums. There are study circles and book groups, and certainly church Bible classes focusing on this subject. I was recently given a book to read called Transformation, which is about becoming healthier in all ways, and one of the chapters on weight loss was on the importance of being able to forgive, that being unable to forgive was just one more thing weighing us down and keeping us from feeling and from being healthy. Despite this bevy of literature citing our need for forgiveness, I continue to feel challenged by the concept of forgiveness itself, because to me it still felt tied to, bound up, and inextricably linked with evil and sin and the need to ask God for forgiveness. It remained a challenging topic to tackle, and I felt as though I was not coming any closer to an understanding of it or how to reach it than when I first began seriously considering this as a topic for this service. And then one day, Mike Santo and I were talking about this, that, and the other thing, and I somehow mentioned that I was going to be doing a service on forgiveness some Sunday coming up, and he said, quick as a flash, I'm against forgiveness. Somehow, his firm landing on being against forgiveness fine-tuned me in the opposite response, one of being for forgiveness. And I asked him to share this Sunday with me, to share an exchange of ideas related to forgiveness, and so the chase for clarification was on. I remember working in a Lutheran church for a summer, helping one of my friends who's a Lutheran pastor. And as I was putting together the Sunday bulletin for him one day, I noticed that confession was listed as a part of the service. Well, I only thought Catholics went to confession. I didn't know that Lutherans did this as well. Every week, he told me, every week we confess our sins and are forgiven, he said with such brightness. Every week? I repeated. Really? Well, you guys are sure slow learners. Aren't you given a list of 10 thou shalt nots to memorize? Just don't do those things. And then there's no more need for you to confess. I was teasing him, of course, but then I said more seriously that I thought it felt like an empty game to me. Sin, confess, be forgiven every week for one's entire life. Well, how easy was that? Where was the learning curve in all of that? Where was the sense of personal responsibility for one's actions if one could do whatever one wanted, realize, uh-oh, shouldn't have done that, confess, and be forgiven? It felt to me as though the burden of having done something wrong was too easily lifted. Not that I wanted to be punitive, but I was definitely looking for a different model of where forgiveness might actually take place and make a difference within a person and ultimately within society. For wasn't our goal as human beings to continue to mature and become better and help make the world become a better place? With the model of sin and confession and being forgiven as a matter of course, I could see no forward movement, but only an endless cycle of repeated wrong behavior, thus continuing the notion that we are all sinners and that we all somehow need the wisdom of God to forgive we shabby beings. If it's a given that one is going to sin and be forgiven every week, well, so what? Then it's a game. A person could do whatever they like, sin, and be forgiven, and then sin again, and so on and so forth. There seemed to be missing a moral code, the human court of ethics steering the ship. It struck me as a control issue the church had created to keep people coming through its doors, handing out sin with one hand and forgiveness with the other, being tithed, paying penance, keeping the pastorate next door well-run and staffed, keeping the church alive by pressing people down to their least common denominator, not for the good of the people, but for the good of the church. And then one day, a light that led my way toward a stronger consideration of what forgiveness might look like was when I remembered my grandmother telling me that in Judaism, it is not God who forgives, but only the one who is wronged who can forgive. With forgiveness being illustrated in this manner, to me, it now seemed like a concept that I might not only be able to get my head around and truly see the value of, but which might actually be of value to people who, by their own admissions, by their own internal wrestlings, needed to find a way towards some level of inner peace in order to go on in life, and even in order to finally let go and die. With my being half Jewish, I have always been completely aware of the evil in the world. When half of my gene pool was slaughtered simply because they were Jewish, that I cannot and never will forgive. Evil should never be forgiven or forgotten, for then it is either a form of denial, where not only healing is impossible, but worse, where there is a distinct possibility that repeated similar acts may occur. On the other hand, there are many life moments which one does not forgive oneself for that should be forgiven. Having an abortion, spanking a child, losing one's temper and saying things you didn't mean to, not being the perfect person you were raised to be or have put the pressure upon yourself to be. Forgiving your parents for not being who you wished they were or who you needed them to be. Being able to forgive human fallibilities, our own and others. I don't see forgiveness as denial. I see it as a path toward understanding where one was at that time, given what one knew then, and for accepting oneself at that time. Denial is, I didn't do that. Acceptance is, I did that, and it was wrong. Now that I understand more about what happened, I understand it better, and I can forgive. Despite the Jewish premise of being forgiven by those who have wronged, sometimes the only one to grant the forgiveness is oneself, say in the case of having an abortion that was right at the time. But a woman may still feel shame and guilt and a sense of wrongness about it because of how she was raised or the culture she was raised in or her now mature self considering what might have been. The wrongdoing cannot be forgiven by the wronged, the aborted fetus, so it can only come from oneself to oneself, forgiving the person one was at that time. I have my own situations that I cannot forgive, that I will never forgive, and that eat away at me. Is that healthy? Is there another way other than forgiveness for me to work through those things so that I can move on and move beyond? Not as if not to remember or as if these things hadn't happened, but to be able to function better, to feel better inside for health's sake. Those are the wounds, I think, are the challenging parts of ourselves we all need to work on at some point. Forgiveness, an ability to reconcile in some way, our need to forgive. There is often the conjecture that one must forgive and move on and that the past is the past. I don't believe that the past is frozen. I think that there are many past deeds that continue to live on in a person, in a family, in society. The past is with us all the time. We must not turn a blind eye to it, but must look upon it squarely without wavering and address it. We cannot move forward without knowing the past because it moves with us like a shadow. The challenge is how to deal with it, and forgiveness is one such way. Not to use forgiveness as the same as saying, oh, well, that's okay. But to be able to say, I understand how that act came to be perpetrated upon another. Restorative justice is society's secular way of implementing forgiveness. And great healing for both the offender and the victim or the victim's family have occurred over the past decade or so with this important but difficult bridging of incredible pain with love. As this church year proceeds, day toward day, month upon month, the truth of life not going as planned is evident in our nation. Although most of us feel that we are simply ordinary folk going along in our ordinary ways with nothing remarkable to tell, life often has another take on this. In sudden swiftness, even on bright, sunlit days when nothing bad should happen, we are brought news of hardship and despair, of illness and of cancer, and all too often of death. No one is spared, not the elderly, not the young. No matter the best laid plans, life arrives and shakes us to the core and makes us have to look into its eyes and see all that it contains. Beautiful moments and plain days and unbearable anguish. We may think that we are choosing the paths we find ourselves upon, but it is really life that chooses the path for us in so many ways. We may believe that if we do certain things in a certain way that there are guarantees. Guarantees of how things will turn out for ourselves, for our children, for our dearest friends. But life doesn't play itself out in this manner. It is mercurial, unable to be gathered up and gathered in. If you are alive in it, life will split apart at some point, in some way, someday. Be certain of that, and try to be brave in the face of it, but mostly be kind to yourselves. When life and all of its uncertainties meet up with you unexpectedly and stop you in your tracks, be kind to yourselves and know that only time is the healer. When you find yourself at a crossroads, looking as far as you can beneath the undergrowth to discern which way to take, as in Robert Frost's poem, The Road Less Taken, be kind to yourselves for the choices you are making, for the choices you will soon need to make, for the choices you have already made. For your past, as much as for your present, for the moments seized or allowed to slip away, for all that you have done or didn't do, be kind to yourselves for what has been. We are all on the same road called life, so we have that in common. But it is still the road less traveled we journey upon, because whatever happens is happening uniquely to each and every one of us, sometimes for the first time, and sometimes now, yet again. Understanding this juxtaposition of choice and happenstance is what unites us in humanity. Being there for each other with kindness and with forgiveness toward ourselves and others is what defines us, ultimately.
Thank you, Jane. Sorry, I have a bad cold, so. It's not even Mother's Day yet, and I'm wearing white, so I would like to ask the forgiveness of my partner, Bruce Paul Goodman, the fashionable clothier of Brookfield, and the congregation. Jane and I wrote our statements independently before we really discussed in detail or shared our thoughts. So you're going to find a lot of the things that I say interweaving with what she said, and you're going to find points of agreement and points of disagreement, and that's fine. The title of my talk is Against Forgiveness. I have to accept the world on its own terms and according to its own timetable if I'm going to live in the world as a free being. But there is evil in the world. And if the world must be accepted on its own terms, then living in a state of denial regarding the reality of evil will not enhance my chances to choose good over evil, or to live out my will freely, which is always directed toward the future. What I will and what will be converge in the present moment, passing into the future. It is in the present moment that they meet. I'm now going to quote Nietzsche. Thus spoke Zarathustra. No deed can be annihilated. How could it be undone by punishment? This is what is eternal in the punishment called existence, that existence must eternally become deed and guilt again. Unless the will should at last redeem himself, and willing should become not willing. But, my brothers, you know this fable of madness. I led you away from these fables when I taught you the will is a creator. All it was, the past, is a fragment, a riddle, a dreadful accident, until the creative will says to it, but thus I will it. Until the creative will says to it, but thus I will it, thus shall I will it. End of the quote. Throughout the book, Thus Spoke Zarathustra, which is subtitled, by the way, A Book for All and None, Friedrich Nietzsche rails against the Christian virtues of pity and forgiveness. He sees these virtues as being masks for something destructive in humans. Pity and forgiveness, to him, are ways of removing responsibility for evil from others and from me. Forgiving others, or I, forgiving myself for that matter, forgiving others attempts to accomplish something that cannot be accomplished, willing backwards to undo what was done. Oddly, even Jesus states in the reading from Luke that we had, "No one who puts a hand to the plow and looks back is fit for the kingdom of God." The mission that is adjoined to us by God, in other words, is to move forward from the present into the future. If one's forgiveness assumes that somehow the past can be changed, then the forgiving party also assumes that he or she can stand outside of time and see the world through the eyes of God. To put it another way, forgiving evil attempts to negate it by rising above it. This means my forgiveness wants to conquer evil by being morally superior to it. Forgiving it cloaks over it and keeps it at a distance from me. Thus, I think that I am better than evil. But this is simply more denial. I have no idea who said this originally, but it sounds like Nietzsche or possibly Freud. Under every act of forgiveness, there is a deeper act of denial. Jesus had to chastise Peter for even suggesting that the evil Jesus was to face in Jerusalem could be avoided. "God forbid it, Lord. This must never happen to you." Jesus used strong language with Peter to let him know that avoiding the evil in Jerusalem would be tantamount to abandoning the mission that God imposed on Jesus. Jesus tells Peter, "Get behind me, Satan." Evil must not be forgiven. Evil must be stopped. Evil causes suffering, and forgiveness is impotent to abate or eliminate suffering. When all is forgiven, I give myself permission to wash my hands of any further responsibility and to walk away from my mission and from suffering. I allow myself to feel quite pious and happy. Rather, I must first find the evil in my own heart and own it. Only by accepting the world on the world's terms and by accepting myself exactly as I am, both good and evil, will I find the peace that passes all understanding. Then I will find that forgiveness becomes irrelevant because I will want to be exactly as I am and will be in the future. And what I want to be is a giver. I am tired of taking. I cannot give unless I have something to give, and I cannot give of myself unless I am someone worth giving. Forgiving works against the giving of me because it inserts a hiatus, a gap, a lacuna, a void into my being by covering over an evil that is still there. It creates a blind spot, which is the same thing as denial. And so that I cannot see reality exactly as it is. Just because I don't see the Leviathan Lexus in the next lane to the left of my little Toyota Matrix doesn't mean that the behemoth SUV isn't there, barreling along the road at 75 miles per hour in a place close enough to do some serious damage. If I may, I would like to refer us to something C.S. Lewis said concerning evil. He said, "The presence of evil is like the presence of a wasp in the same room with me. I can go on about my business without obsessing about it, but I sure do want to know where it is while I'm working." Acknowledgement of evil doesn't mean I can't enjoy life or that I can't choose to work against evil. Acknowledgement of evil just changes me because it frees me to navigate safely around it. Here's an example from my own life of what I'm talking about. My tormentor, and I refer to this person as my tormentor because the person is still alive. My tormentor made sure that I grew up to loathe myself at a very early age. I was taught to accept the fact that the verbal abuse I received was my own fault, which is the same thing as saying that my tormentor was the way it was because I deserved to be tormented, as if I asked for it. Or according to the tormentor, I did, in fact, beg for it. With the passage of time and the distance of space, I came to see, with the help of some very good therapists and thousands of dollars later, and some very good drugs, that what happened to me was just that. The harassment was something from the outside that wasn't me, just something that happened to me. The evil wasn't me. The evil was quite real, and despite my denials of just how bad it was, I had to face my personal hell with courage in order to accept the torment that I did not deserve as evil. And in discovering the depth of the evil that I was not to blame for, and by this fact being set free to live, I found that by laying the blame where it really belonged, at the feet of my tormentor, I could cause my own cure. I had the power in me to accuse the assailant, not by forgiveness, but by convicting the guilty party. By accusing the evil of being just what it was, evil's power over me vanished and I could breathe in and out life-giving air. At this point, forgiveness becomes irrelevant, even laughable. In the face of justice, forgiveness is a bad actor in a soap opera, posturing, emoting, whining, and evaporating in the sunshine of truth. Jesus said that the Son of Man would have to go to Jerusalem and be killed so that the resurrection of the dead and the coming of the Holy Spirit would be a reality for the world. Friedrich Nietzsche has Zarathustra going under first, undergoing the pity and haughtiness of the last man, undergoing and going into the earth and the dirt and the baseness of cruel men, only to rise up and to go over man, leaping and dancing to become the overman, what we popularly know as Superman. The overman is the man who overcomes himself and his pale pity and false forgiveness. Yes, I must overcome myself. Even my selfhood may harbor a hint of pity. Rather than pitying myself or pitying others, I should be there to help them get on with their lives, to discover the power in them that is the truth that will set them free. I need to go under first. I must dive down into the abyss in my nautilus to the places of denial. But as my captain, I will not take Nemo. Rather, I will commission Freud to be the captain of my heart, to help me ferret out the lies that I tell myself every day. Oh, it's not that bad. I guess I had that coming. It must be something I did wrong. I'll do better next time. And on the self-abasing chatter goes. On the other hand, I will undergo the challenge of helping others first to see if I can't muster up my own powerhouse of compassion. I will undergo the physical therapy required to renew my body and my hands to help others build their lives, even in small ways. I will undergo psychotherapy to strengthen my emotions and my thoughts so that I can be a rock of confidence when others feel anxiety or lack courage. And I must undergo suffering to strengthen my spirit because the world's renewal depends on my humanity's endurance through the dark times. Sometimes the light at the end of the tunnel is turned off due to budget cuts. But that won't happen to me because I can always be the light if I want to. I can smile. I can sing. I can't whistle, but I can dance. I can live as long as I need to. And when death comes a knocking at my door, I want to welcome it as a friend is welcomed. Why? Because I will recognize death when it comes. It will be familiar to me from all the little deaths that I experienced in life and all the times I went under. That is, underwent life. You know, Nietzsche's book, Thus Spoke Zarathustra, is truly a book for all and none. It is a book for all because we are all in this together, and the way we overcome is to suffer in patience. We overcome by undergoing. Yet Nietzsche's book is clearly for no one, for who can endure the world's vast need for healing without experiencing death? In a way, isn't death for all and none? It comes to all. Nevertheless, none will endure it. Ah, but we are the living. Let's forget about death just for now. Let's leave the dead to bury the dead. Let us set our hands to the plow and not look back. Let's keep our eyes on the eastern horizon, waiting for the sunshine of truth to evaporate the darkness of evil. And let us rejoice in the world exactly as it is. And if we can't rejoice, at least let's move around in it with some stoic resignation until we can rejoice. And if we cannot do even this much, if we are beaten down and in pain, confused and lost, or even dying, let us think once more before our last breath that we did live, we were, and maybe we will be. Let us be. May it be so.
Anyway, it's over. It's in the past. Only hurt. is all, to let it linger and last. So maybe it's time for some serious old folk business. Time for forgiveness. Maybe it's time. Maybe it's time for forgiveness.
We have a few moments for a polylog if people want to stand up here now, Mikey. People want to comment on what we have shared, our various takes, and Greg's rendition of forgiveness in his thoughts. You're most welcome.
Hi, my name is Erin, and my take is sort of part of both of what you were describing. I accept that there is evil in the world, and I accept that there is a light within the hearts of those who, in my perception, may look like they're doing evil. And I accept that we are all on the planet with our own lessons to learn. But where I believe forgiveness comes into place is if there is a hardness in my heart that feels like a stone, then whether I call it forgiving the other person or accepting the person for the light and the love and the energy that they are attempting to be and not judging their path, that's when that stone chisels away and becomes soft. And so that's all I have. Thank you.
She's on my side. Thank you.
Well, thank you both for sharing, John. Good thoughts, and one thing, I guess, Mike, when you were talking about not forgiving because, you know, that doesn't acknowledge the evil or the evil hasn't stopped, it denies the evil, but when the evil stops and isn't there anymore, and is there room for forgiveness then? Because it doesn't have to be stopped because it's already stopped. Does that open up forgiveness?
To put it succinctly, if I can do that, what I was trying to get at was acceptance. And perhaps Aaron touched on this a little bit too. Acceptance is what I see, acceptance of things the way they are, and acceptance is also my responsibility for what I can do about things the way they are, negates the relevance of forgiveness. Forgiveness at that point becomes unnecessary. To accept somebody else for whatever failings they have, to accept myself for my own failings, where I'm at this particular time, because time plays a big role in all of us. We're dealing with the past, present, and future. That when those things kind of come together and things look the way they ought to, and if there's something that doesn't look the way it ought to, if there's nothing I can do about it anyway, I still have to accept that, just to say, this is the way it is. Forgiveness, I mean, we don't even think of it. That, at least that's why I'm approaching it. However, I do know that people use the word differently. And I'm thinking more of forgiveness as in this asset and debit thing. You know, forgiveness like, well, you owe me this much, then I'll forgive that part of the debt, which comes, of course, from my Christian background, a very much Catholic background, where God's up there with, you know, the scales and everything, figuring out you've done this much wrong, so you haven't done this much wrong, so you don't have to go to hell, but you can go to limbo, you know.
And that was one of the things that we discovered when we were emailing back and forth some of our thoughts, was that I was raised UU, but I also have this Jewish background that looks at things, you know, here and now and face to face and things. And so it really was very clear to me that Michael's Catholic upbringing was certainly speaking to him in his reaction to these words. So.
Is it on? Okay. As a child, Mike, like you, I don't know who your tormentor was, but I was a child whose mother used to invite beautiful girls over when I was growing up and tell me that if only I would look like them, she would love me, but by the way, I never would. Have had to deal with that internal message for many years, and you can imagine how that has manifested itself. And also after many years of therapy and hundreds of thousands of dollars and a final swift kick in the ass, I finally know who I am, and I am empowered to see that as the other person's problem. But as an unschooled person in religion, I don't see it in terms of forgiveness or not. I see it more in terms of what kind of life do I want to live. And I just have so much love, like Jane, inside of me. And I surround myself with people and live life experiences that give me joy. So I just don't even relate to the concept of forgiveness or not.
You put it very well. Maybe that's what I was trying to get at.
I should have been emailing back and forth with you.
I'm going to do a line here, Bill Murray talking to Jane Curtin on Saturday Night Live, but I won't because we have guests here.
My name's Barb, and I just want to thank both of you for bringing your perspective. And this is just who I am. I hold both perspectives. And hearing you both speak so eloquently just reinforces, you know, there's always more than one way to approach a subject. Thank you.
My name is Kaz, and I'm looking at this forgiveness from more of the Buddhist point of view, and that it's letting go the attachment to being wronged, attachment to my thought on it. And if I would just let go attachment to what is wrong to me, or what I should be, or how it should have been, and just let that go, that's how I see forgiveness as. And it's not a really the other person's benefit, but the benefit is for me.
Carrie, right here. I just wanted to say that I believe that both of you are more similar than different, and that one of my favorite quotes that I'm using over over and over with people when we get into this issue of what's going on in Madison is, failure to forgive is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. And if one of you is sick and one isn't, you know, it's a healthy perspective. But it doesn't also at all have anything to do with your desire and passion to fight for justice. You know, you let go of the attachment part, but you still do what you can, where you can, how you can.
Hi, I'm Bob Evans. And I appreciate the debate. It's nice to see that it's not just, pardon the wearing of clothes, black and white. But, but when you actually blend the two thoughts together, it makes one realize that there's more of a gray in how we perceive things, how we react to things, and how we can even present things. I thank you.
I know. She's the evil one. Yeah. Is there just more done though? Okay, I'll do the closing words, Michael, if I may.
Yes, you may.
Theologian Reinhold Niebuhr puts it best. Nothing that is worth doing can be achieved in our lifetime. Therefore, we must be saved by hope. Nothing we do, however virtuous, can be accomplished alone. Therefore, we are saved by love. No virtuous act is quite as virtuous from the standpoint of our friend or foe as it is from our standpoint. Therefore, we must be saved by the final form of love, which is forgiveness. Go in peace.